Wait for it.
There's no need to wait, geeks. We are back. This is the Active Geek Podcast with your hosts, Jim and Chuck. And Chuck, I had said multiple times we weren't going to take a hiatus, but the world has dropped its sack on me and said, remember when you were doing nothing during COVID and when you should have been doing stuff during COVID? Well, here's payback. You have no time to yourself, no free time. And that's what caused the delay. But we're back inching our way to episode 300. This is episode number 298. So I'm pretty stoked. Episode 300 is something that you and I have been talking about for a few months now at this point. We've been preparing for it for about a month or so. We're very excited for it, but we'll get to that in an episode and a half from now, because this episode is our Werewolf by Night review episode, the Marvel special presentation that just dropped on Disney Plus. We'll talk about that. But before we kind of get into that, let's talk about a trailer for a video game that you and I have kind of been clamoring for a movie for this property for a very long time. And I think Nintendo really just kind of pumps its brakes on things when it comes to their entertainment license, because the original Super Mario Brothers, as campy and as crazy as it was, doesn't hold a candle to superhero, or not superhero movies, but video game movies of today. Even, and that's saying something, because they've been pretty bad minus Sonic.
Yeah.
But now we've got Nintendo and Illumination coming together and giving us Super Mario Brothers with a stacked cast: Chris Pratt, Jack Black, Charlie Day, Seth Rogen, the list goes on. We got a little 1.5 minute, 2 minute trailer. What did you think of the little teaser trailer that we got for the Super Mario Brothers movie?
Jack Black as King Koopa, friggin' awesome. He was great. The animation looks great.
Yeah.
Illumination had their style, but they didn't really change the looks much. You know what I mean?
No, it was very, you know, Nintendo Switch kind of modern Mario. It looked like a video game, just with, you know, the cutscenes of a video game, and I'm not mad at that at all. I like how they made Bowser look like Jack Black.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, in the facial features. Like, I think that that's pretty cool. But, like, just from the jump, the visual aesthetic of it gave me nostalgia.
Yeah.
I was like, this is me playing Mario as a kid, just with cleaner graphics. The graphics that I really hoped for. And you obviously have the humor that Illumination is known for, when the little penguin tribe rolls in there and they're trying to fight the Koopas. And you know they're going to get decimated. What did you think about the debut of Mario? The look alone was perfect, I think, in my opinion. But we hear Chris Pratt as Mario, and I think the first words we hear from Chris Pratt is "Hola."
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's not a greeting in Italian. But what did you think of Chris Pratt's very limited dialogue as Mario?
I mean, they kept saying, the producers were like, oh, he's been working on his accent, it sounds great. Didn't really sound any different than Chris Pratt.
Right. It was literally Chris Pratt saying, hola.
Yeah. So, like, I'm thinking, I mean, it sucks. You know, I get it. They're getting big, you know, trying to get big name to sell. Like, Charles Marionette, you know, isn't going to put butts in the seats. Chris Pratt is.
Yeah, but think about it. We don't have to audition right now, but I'm pretty sure you and I could do a stereotypical Italian Mario, superficial, not stereotypical, but superficial Italian accent like Mario's. You know what I mean? It's not that hard of a cadence to hit. And if you have the resources and the money that Chris Pratt has, you think he'd get a voice acting coach who said, all right, this is what you, or consult Charles Marionette.
Yeah.
Like, or Martinette, not Marionette, Martinette. Consult him and say, you know, listen, I don't want to step on your toes here. I don't want to be better than you. I want to be able to carry your shoes. So get me there. And maybe we haven't seen, obviously we got a little snippet of him saying something. And I think him, the penguin, and Bowser were all we heard. So you know, the jury's out on that one. Visually, beautiful. Stacked. Yeah. Love it. Cast, stacked. Chris Pratt, Mario. Anya Taylor-Joy, who seems to be in everything, in every big movie, like Amsterdam. That cast is stacked. Yeah. She plays Princess Peach, our boy. I know we were really hoping for him to be the thing. Charlie Day. Jack Black, Keegan-Michael Key, Seth Rogen, Fred Armisen, you know, Sebastian Maniscalco, Kevin Michael Richardson, Charles Martinet is in it, Kerry Payton, you know, it's stacked. I just wish we would have heard the authentic Mario voice in this. Maybe that's the big sell. Maybe that's me. Maybe, you know, what's this, a Sony movie?
Universal.
Illumination Sony, right? Universal, yeah, because they're at the theme park. Maybe this is Universal playing their cards close to their chest and saying, just wait for it. Be patient. And I'm happy with that. I'm glad we didn't get a Warner Brothers trailer. So overall, this movie has me pretty hyped up. I'm probably going to see it in theaters if I have time.
I would like to.
Yeah, it'll be a fun experience. Maybe you and I can go together. We haven't done that in a while. Hold hands, eat popcorn, watch Super Mario Brothers. Maybe dress up. I have the body of Luigi. You have the body of Mario. Just grow a mustache. We're good to go. So before we move on, before we get into it, we're going to enter spoiler territory because this is a 52-minute special edition mini movie, I guess, of a character that a lot of people probably have never heard of. And one, it's understandable. Werewolf by Night, 70s character. That's when they were kind of experimenting with people. Really didn't move much further into the Marvel Universe. Definitely didn't move into the MCU. But what people should know about Werewolf by Night is it's very important in terms of the Marvel lore because it introduced a character named Mark Spector, a.k.a. Moon Knight, in, where Moon Knight was actually a villain. It was very similar to how Wolverine was initially introduced in the Hulk comics. But Werewolf by Night, Jack Russell, we get to meet him. And this is a fun little neo-noir, black-and-white, 52-minute romp for a character that, you know, for the most part, all three of the MCU characters or the Marvel characters that were used in this movie are pretty unfamiliar to people. I think the most familiar one would be Man-Thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? A.K.A.
Definitely.
Ted. But, like, we've been talking about Jack Russell for a while, ever since our, I think, the first podcast when we talked about Moon Knight joining the MCU and Jack Russell being in there and everything. But I can tell you one thing. When this movie was announced, one, I was stoked because anything like horror-based, anything with new characters, and when they said it was going to be a 52-minute special, I was like, great, you know, not everybody needs a series. But then I saw the trailer, and they introduced Elsa Bloodstone, and you know me. I've been talking about Elsa Bloodstone for a hot minute now. And, man, this 52-minute special movie really sent me for a loop, but I want to know what your thoughts are on the story that's centered around a bunch of monster hunters hunting a giant monster for a chance at immortality by getting the Bloodstone. And our boy, Jack Russell, being one of those. So what did you think of the story of this movie?
Well, first, I love, like you said, the noir storyline, our aesthetic. I've really been, I've been watching all the old Universal Monster movies. I start with Dracula, then Frankenstein. I'm going to go to The Invisible Man next. And they're all for free on Peacock. So that's awesome.
Nice.
Shout
out to Peacock for sponsoring the podcast.
But, so I've been into that, and, you know, this is obviously, you know, Michael Giacchino paid homage to this, to those, you know, early monster movies. I mean, you know, these movies like Dracula and Frankenstein, like, they're 90-year-old movies, and they still hold up. So, you know, they were really inspired a lot of filmmakers today, and you can see that, you know, this is direct homage to that, and it was great. I love the story. I loved, you know, it was kind of like a, I forget the words I would say, but The one thing that was really cool about it was, I forget his name, but we're going to call him Papa Bloodstone, when his casket.
Ulysses.
And then she was winding it up. Because, like, what was cool about the story is you didn't really know what timeline you were in until later. Like, the only thing that gave it a hint that it was a little more modern was the guards that had the electric sticks.
Right, exactly. They also had, like, GoPros on there. They, like, body cam. But that's exactly what I was saying. Like, it gives you the feeling that it's, like, it's set in a very ambiguous timeline. Like, this could have been, you know, 1830s, 1950s, 2010s, 2040s. Yeah. You know, it could have been any of those decades. And I think that that was a really, really good call on Michael Giacchino's part. Like, to leave it ambiguous until the very end. I thought that was...
Yeah, because, really, like, when they were in the tomb, I was trying to look at the dates of the death. And the latest one I saw was, like, 67 or something like that.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so it's after the 60s. But, like, I really like that. They didn't try to, like, push a timeline on you. But I thought it was great. I loved the story. I loved, you know, how they kind of went into, like, a labyrinth and just said, all right, you got to find this monster. And here, you know, Jack is a monster himself, and his good friend Ted. Which Man-Thing was amazing. His design and look was fantastic. Because I didn't know, like they said, they were going to introduce Man-Thing. And I didn't really look into it because I wanted to be surprised. I thought it was like, we got a lot more Man-Thing than I expected.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think Man-Thing was going to be the beast that they were hunting. But I was glad. That was a good choice as well. Like, Man-Thing's been mentioned, or at least seen, not seen, but like he's been introduced twice before. In Nothing Personal, Maria Hill dropped the name Ted and Man-Thing. And then in Thor Ragnarok, we saw the face of Man-Thing on the Grandmaster's tower in Sakaar. The fact that we got a full Man-Thing, when they also like didn't make him like awkward, you know what I mean? Like the running scene, yeah, it was a little choppy in terms of the CGI, but I feel like that was mainly possibly a choice because of the way the film was. Like, you're watching the movie, and it's black and white, obviously, but at the top, you start seeing, like, this kind of, like, cigarette burn. Yeah.
Like the film was burning. Yeah, no, I noticed that. And that was...
It's when they're changing scenes, like, in the old-time films. So, like, I thought that that was very smart. The storyline was great. It was simple. They gave you a villain in LaRussa, number one. I hated her. And they gave you the hero in Jack Russell, who, going into it, they were like, you know, you have the most kills. You have over 100. And you're like, oh, well, is he, like, my thought was that he was going to turn into a werewolf and they were going to end up hunting him. And he wasn't the monster they intended for. It was going to be Man-Thing. But he didn't do that. I thought that was also a great choice. I think my favorite part of this was when Jack and Elsa were locked in the cage and LaRussa comes and hits him with the Bloodstone so they can reveal what monster he is. And you don't see the physical transformation. The use of shadows was beautiful. And the use of background lighting and noises, like, I thought that that was like a very artistic approach and a very well-delivered approach. You know what I mean? Like, him transforming into the werewolf was the best scene of the movie.
Well, yeah.
Not to mention all the violence, right? Like, Elsa Bloodstone's fight at the sarcophagus with the other assassin, Monster Hunter, was awesome. Cut his hand off and then killed him with his own hand. Awesome. I thought that, like, they said this was going to be a TV-14. It eventually became a TV-MA, which was fantastic. But when I finished this movie, I went away saying, this is exactly what Marvel needed. This came at a perfect time. The movies really haven't been hitting as much as I think they've expected them to hit with the fans. She-Hulk is not hitting with a lot of fans, myself included. I know you're digging it, but it's not the most popular of the shows. I think that this came at the right time, and it's a bold move on Marvel. Yeah. you know, and correct me if you disagree, but Marvel has been calculated from day one and has been incorporating these characters in movies and TV shows, and now we get this one-off. And I think that this gives us hope that other characters that could potentially be big members of the MCU don't need to be incorporated in series or movies. They get their own one-off, and then we see them pop up later. You know what I mean? So do you think that this came at the right time?
Definitely. You know, in the past, like, kind of since COVID, a lot of their stuff has been considered stale to people. The movies especially, I know the TV shows have been more received better, but besides, like, No Way Home, like, Thor Ragnarok, not what people wanted. Or not...
Well, that was years ago.
Thor Love and Thunder. Black Widow, Doctor Strange, Eternals. You know, those movies, like, have put some bad taste in people's mouth. Like, the TV shows have been better with Falcon Winter Soldier, Loki, stuff like that.
Yeah. I would say that the Spider-Man movie and Shang-Chi have been the strongest performers in Phase 4.
Yeah, that's...
Doctor Strange, like, being a close third, after a second watch, it got better. Thor Love and Thunder got better after a second watch as well, but it's still not, like, the caliber of Phase 3 or Phase 2. You know what I mean? Like, Phase 4 came off at a really rough start. But in terms of these characters and that were utilized, Werewolf by Night, Jack Russell, Man-Thing, and Elsa Bloodstone, did you like that they used those three characters and didn't, like, bog this down with, like, Dr. Voodoo or Blade or anything like that?
Yeah, because, you know, besides Man-Thing, a lot of people don't know these characters. I didn't really know Jack Russell all that much. Elsa Bloodstone I knew of. But, you know, you don't want to oversaturate. You got 52 minutes. So you don't want to oversaturate with these characters and, you know, make the storyline muddy. And they didn't. You have three central characters with the central characters, and you have a couple of background players. And it served its purpose. Like, if you put Blade in there, if you put, like you said, Dr. Voodoo, it's going to be too crowded. And we talk about this with movies and shows and stuff, like, sometimes it gets jumbled. And they really did a good job with, here's your three main characters, here's a storyline, there you go.
Yeah, and I think, like, had this been a 2-hour movie, we would have seen, like, Mephisto, we would have seen Blue Devil. I feel like we would have seen a bunch of characters that necessarily would have felt kind of jammed into this movie. Very similar to another series that we don't need to talk about yet. But I think they navigated the, you know, if this was a basketball court, all three players played their role well, and they got enough court time and screen time to kind of execute the game plan. Like, this was well done. And what's crazy about this is something that is a directorial debut. This is Michael Giacchino's debut. And you and I have been talking about Michael Giacchino for years, about how great he is as a composer. He's been a composer for, you know, decades. He's got over 150 plus credits in terms of composing a lot of the Marvel stuff, a lot of animated stuff, a lot of the popular stuff that you've seen, we've seen, has been, you know, Michael Giacchino's work. What did you think on his directorial debut? Is this like a home run, a single, you know, baseball terms now? Phillies are in the playoffs, but, like, is this a, you know, grand slam home run?
Yeah, it really showed that he, you know, he can do more than just compose. You know, I know he's done, like, short films here and there, but, you know, nothing of merit, you know, was never released or anything like that. But you can tell he's a fan of the genre.
For sure. And film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he could have made a stereotypical superhero movie and played it safe, but he went black and white, and he went horror, and he went neo-noir horror. Like, he could have been extremely safe in this one. And he said, you know what? Let me play it different. I want to be different. I want to stand out. And, you know, I've heard mixed reviews about this. I think it's just because people aren't familiar with the characters and they're like, oh, it's black and white. Why can't it be in color? You know, I got a 4K TV for this reason. Like, you know, sit down and watch this and appreciate what it's for, you know, or what it is. This is a homage to, like you said, Universal Monsters, the movies that are responsible for Halloween specials currently. So, again, I think Michael Giacchino knocked it out of the park. But before we give him the keys to the kingdom, my follow-up question is, would you like him to do more in terms of like short films like this, 52 minutes with Marvel, or do you want to see him get control of a series?
I think he's definitely, this is not the last time we're going to see him directing, for sure. I think they're, I don't know if a series, but I think he's going to be with him in the near future. Blade is
so
open.
So you think like Blade is open, we get up more Halloween specials with him?
I don't know. Like I just said, Blade opened up. They don't have a director.
Yeah, I was actually gonna bring that up.
And from what I heard, that they wanted to go like early 20th century.
Okay.
Like 1920s. And, you know, if you're looking for that aesthetic, I think he could pull it off from what we just saw.
Yeah, I know. I definitely know Mahershala Ali wasn't happy with what's going on with Blade, for sure.
Yeah, well, they stopped the production right now. Who knows if that could change.
So would you go straight to, you know, big movie Blade, or would you keep him at something small for now?
Give him Blade.
Okay, all right. Man, that's a big step up in terms of, you know, budget, acting, talent. You know,
yeah.
Gael Garcia was great, but you're getting Academy Award winning Mahershala Ali. One wouldn't like it in 1920s. I don't need a Blade origin story. I'd like it to be set in the current MCU, in London or wherever Blade wants to go, and then he winds up in London with Dane Whitman. I think that would be the right move. You know, spoiler alert, we've already seen Blade's son in the universe already at some point. So, you know, Blade's been, you know, he's been not mentioned by name, but like the joke is out there. So the lore is out there. So I'm curious to see where they go. Speaking of characters, would you be opposed to these characters popping back up? And if so, when or where?
No, I mean, definitely, I would like to see him back up. I don't know where they fit because there's no horror based. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, Blade, but Blade's nowhere near to be coming out soon.
Would you like to see, you know, Jack Russell go back to, you know, his lore and kind of be reintroduced in Moon Knight?
That would be cool. That would fit a little better.
Elsa is a traveling monster hunter. I'm sure she's passed through London or Egypt at this point. You know, mm-hmm. you could throw them in Moon Knight season 2. Does it make 100% sense? No, probably not. I'd like to see maybe a possible Midnight Suns. You know, you could build around them. Elsa could get her own series, to be honest with you. And those characters can kind of just pop up throughout it. Man-Thing could get his own series. Werewolf by Night could get his own series. Like, you know, it's like that Oprah meme. You get a car, you get a car. But, like, that's what Marvel does. They give everybody series.
Not series, but it was cool. Like, they're putting them out there. They put Elsa and the werewolf in Avengers Campus that you can meet them in Disneyland.
Yeah, and they also added this version of Elsa's costume in the Marvel Strike game on the phone. So like Marvel is ahead of they're on top of their shit. They're not DC, obviously. So where DC can't even get movies together or in theaters, Marvel's like, let's do a Werewolf by Night Halloween special. What's the worst that could happen? And honestly, keep pumping out these holiday specials.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting a Christmas special. I'd like to see a Valentine's Day special. I don't care if it's Devil, Dinosaur, or Moon Girl. Like, give me characters that you have no plans for in the MCU, but you know, fans love. Put them out there.
A Halloween special would be cool with Gambit and Rogue.
See, Valentine's Day special with Gambit and Rogue is where I would go.
That's what I just said.
You said Halloween.
Oh, I meant Valentine's.
I was going to say, I mean, what, they kill each other and then they fall back in love? That would be cool too, but yeah, I mean, maybe further down the line, you know, 2023, when we start reintroducing mutants now that, you know, Hugh Jackman's back as Wolverine in Deadpool 3. Whew, praise the comic gods for that one. We don't have to worry about, is Taron Egerton Wolverine? Is, you know, Daniel Radcliffe Wolverine? Is Shia LaBeouf Wolverine? Like, it's, we've got our Wolverine. Final thing, let's geek grade this movie. I'm going very high with this movie. Where are you at?
I'm going to go 9.5.
That's 9.7. And I don't care what anybody says. This was, you know, for being a direct-to-TV holiday special, this movie was a film. This was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. The story was easy to navigate. You had a villain. You had a hero. You know, it's sitting at 91% on Rotten Tomatoes and 93% as fan score. So we're right there. We're just a little hyped up because we love it. But that's it, man. We're going to get out of here. Short episode this week. Next week, episode 299, we're going to stay on the Marvel train. Because honestly, that's all that's really out right now that's, you know, wrapping up. But in the meantime, you can follow us on social media, The Active Geek. You can follow Chuck underscore The Active Geek. You can follow Galaxy Wars Podcast. We will be back as well with some new episodes. You can follow Gym Class. I have a, I think it's like 15, 20 minute episode out. So you can check that out. But that's it. Yeah, we're going to be out of here, man. She-Hulk next week. I think this is going to be Godzilla versus Kong all over again. But I'm ready for it. So if you haven't watched Werewolf by Night, and we didn't do too much spoiling, please check it out. It's a fantastic little little film, a little indie project by this small studio named Marvel. But that's it for the Active Geek Podcast. I'm Jim.
I am Chuck.
And we are out.